Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's Daily Politics Podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. Now, Theresa May has just finished speaking in the debate about the motion of no confidence in the government. And James, how has that debate opened?
So far, Jeremy Corbyn made a rather underwhelming speech. I don't think even his most fervent admirers could have said that this was him at his best. He's not a natural House of Commons man, and the speech didn't quite kind of reach the moment. I don't think it would change many minds, put it like that. But then again, I don't think there are very many minds to be changed. As Corbyn himself admitted towards the end of his speech, Labour are highly unlikely to win this confidence motion because Theresa May is kept in number 10 by kind of three different parts of her, or four different parts of her coalition, right? So it's the DUP, and they will back her unless and until the backstop looks like becoming reality. They take the view that the withdrawal agreement was voted down last night, and so the UK is either leaving without a deal or leaving with a deal without the backstop in it. So they won't move against her yet. Then another group who voted against her last night are the ERG. Again, they think that their best chance of getting to no deal is to run down the clock, and they think that, you know, that is what is going to happen. Marc Francois, who is a kind of one of the key figures in the ERG, delighted in telling Theresa May that, you know, he was a Conservative first and foremost, and he would say all of the ERG will walk through the lobby of Theresa May. Then there is the third group, the group who are actually most critical of Theresa May at PMQs, and that is the Tory second referendumers. There are no signs I've heard from those of them I've contacted. They say that they are voting with Theresa May tonight and they don't know of any of their number who are not. And again, what reason do they have to vote with Jeremy Corbyn? Even if they were prepared to end their career in the Tory party by voting against a Conservative Prime Minister in a confidence motion, Jeremy Corbyn's not offering them anything. He's not saying, vote for me and I'll hold a second referendum and then go to the country, you know, which might be an offer that might tempt some of them. You know, Sarah Woodison has suggested that she would be tempted by such an offer. So that group are not going to do it. And then there's the payroll vote, who will stay loyal to her last night and will stay loyal to her today. So it's very hard to see how Jeremy Corbyn wins this vote. But I have to say, watching Corbyn and May's speeches, it was not an advert for our political class.
Yes, Katie, tell us a little bit more about those speeches and what they contained or perhaps didn't contain by way of inspiration.
So Jeremy Corbyn got up first to speak and he attacked Theresa May on Brexit, but he also attacked the Tories on their domestic record and tried to hammer points home on that. It wasn't so helpful that there were several, you know, MPs intervening with points of order, and there was one particularly notable one from Anna Soubry, which again highlighted how this is uniting the Tory party, briefly at least, who asked if Jeremy Corbyn was right about everything he was saying about what had gone wrong with the country under Conservative rule. Why is it the case that, according to a poll at the weekend, Labour is 6 points behind? Is it because you are the most useless opposition leader of all time? Now, Jeremy Corbyn tried to shrug that off, but there was definitely that kind of feeling. At points, it felt slightly comedy. And I have to say, when Jeremy Corbyn was going through his points on why he thought he needed a general election, you also saw figures on the Tory side like George Freeman pop up and ask questions about what the Labour Brexit policy is going to be in this general election that they're ready for. And again, Jeremy Corbyn kept fudging those answers. He wouldn't be precise. So you didn't get the impression that this Brexit manifesto is ready to go, that they know exactly what they want to do when they take power. And I think that did undermine the argument slightly. And even some of the MPs behind Jeremy Corbyn didn't look like they were, you know, fully there for him. Theresa May, when she took to her turn, sounded remarkably confident for someone who had just had suffered the biggest government defeat in history. And she did speak a little bit on Brexit. She gave us, you know, a best of from her conference speech this year, talking about what the Conservative Party does. But I think the most telling thing from this wasn't so much the speeches, which I will not go down as the greats, just as Theresa May's speech last night won't. It was more how the backbench MPs were responding. And you had MPs from across the divide in the Tory party intervening to be helpful to Theresa May. But the only a slight word of caution there is, as the debate went on, the most difficult questions Theresa May faced came from Labour MPs like Yvette Cooper, who tried to pin the Prime Minister down on what she planned to do on Brexit now that she had suffered this defeat. And that is an uncomfortable question for her, because that's what her own party want to know too. And one MP made the point that she was speaking as though she had lost by 30 votes last night, when actually she'd lost by over 200. Yvette Cooper tried to pin her down if a customs union compromise was coming. Now, that was something a cabinet minister has hinted at earlier today. Number 10 has slapped down. Theresa May appeared to slap it down, but she didn't rule it out completely. And I think as those questions were answered, you could see Conservative backbenchers starting to look a little bit more concerned again, because obviously whatever she does say can't unite her party when it comes to Brexit.
And James, at PMQs, the matter of red lines came up a lot, not just in Jeremy Corbyn's questions, but in questions from Ken Clark and so on. Did we learn anything from Theresa May's answers? The answer is normally no to that question.
Well, certainly not before she's won a confidence motion. She's not prepared to go into these talks saying everything's on the table. The customs union is the obvious question up for discussion here. You know, it is something that is Labour's main ask. If you go through Jeremy Corbyn's conference speech and you take him at his word that he'd back a deal that did the following things, the customs union is the thing that's clearly missing from Theresa May's deal. I think it also might well unlock various people on the Labour backbenches. And it is something that the softer elements of Theresa May's cabinet, you know, they argue, you know, Greg Clark, Amber Rudd, Philip Hammond, David Gawk, they've all argued for in the past. But Theresa May is very reluctant to do that, because I think she knows that that would cost her the support of some of the more hardline Eurosceptics in her party. If you go through the history of Tory Euroscepticism, a lot of it has been about free trade and the customs union as a protectionist instrument. And also anything to do with trade has a particular place in the Tory psyche, because it was obviously the Corn Laws that split the party. I wonder, though, whether Theresa May will explore some kind of fudge. One possible thing could be that the UK does a kind of 10-year renewable customs union with the EU and leaves the common commercial policy. So she tries to dress this up as it's really just an extended transition for customs. We're confident that in 10 years' time, the new super technology that we need will be in place, will mean that we can basically still have frictionless trade in terms of, you know, no customs checks, but with that while leaving the customs union. I was thinking, one of the reasons that made me think this is someone very close to Theresa May was saying to me the other day about, when talking about customs, like, do you remember the big argument between Betamax and VHS? You know, that's all been made redundant by streaming. And I wonder whether they're heading towards a kind of argument like that on the customs union. And if you left the common commercial policy, you could obviously sign trade deals on stuff not related to goods. So now, you obviously couldn't sign very many of those, because there are not many countries that would want to do a purely services only agreement, but you could have a kind of UK-Singapore, UK-Switzerland trade deal, and you could call them a trade deal, and that might make people feel better. But I think the other thing about Theresa May, and why I think she'll be reluctant to do the customs union point, someone who sits in on lots of her, someone who knows the discussions that she has with world leaders, says to me, one of the problems with conceding on a customs union for her is that in nearly every conversation she has had with any world leader, she said, look, after Brexit, let's talk trade. Now, her critics would say, look, you know, if she got her way on the Chequers plan, that she already couldn't talk very much, but she could still theoretically talk trade. And I think there's this person had a view that she'd be very reluctant to give up on the customs union, because giving up on that would basically be very embarrassing for her on the world stage. Now, obviously, at some point, just getting there, getting through the day, trumps embarrassment. But I think the customs union will be the thing that she's loath to give up on. And also, as a negotiating tactic, I don't think she's going to want to give up on that as the first item in the cross-party talks.
So, Katie, what are we expecting to happen over the next few days? Theresa May's line at PMQs was very much, I'm going to be having talks with people to find out what Parliament could actually accept in terms of a deal. Do we know what the talks are going to consist of, who's going to be invited and so on?
Well, there's much outrage this morning from the Labour front bench that they have not been invited yet to these talks. Now, I'd say in Theresa May's slight defence here, given that the first thing Jeremy Corbyn did when Theresa May's deal was voted down was try to overthrow her government, you don't get the impression that were you to invite Jeremy Corbyn around for a cup of tea, cross-party agreement would be the first thing on his mind. But that hasn't stopped stop several front benchers from taking to the airwaves this morning and being outraged that they haven't been contacted yet. I think the type of figures Theresa May is looking at or Number 10 are thinking about here are people like Hilary Benn, Yvette Cooper, backbenchers who they think at least will say they want, you know, something in the country's interest. People who they think they can work with. But I think there was a slight problem here, which is, A, I mean, Theresa May just needs to get through this confidence vote. One of her many problems is that, unlike with the Tory rules, there's no rule on how many confidence votes she can bring against the government. So it's not like she gets through this and she can say, oh, I'm safe for a year. And all the signs from Labour suggest that they plan to just do several confidence votes, strike when eventually one will stick and they'll get an early election. And I think these confidence votes are going to get worse for her as she has to make decisions. But yeah, so once this one is out the way, she will start these talks. But given that Number 10 are very keen to press her red lines right now, and that might be a slight bluff just to get through this one vote, if it really is the case that she is not willing to compromise on the customs union, if she's not willing to compromise on freedom of movement, I don't think these talks are going to last very long. I think they'll be quite brief, because I just don't see, if you are trying to get Labour votes and she needs 116 votes, new votes, while not losing any of the votes she already has to pass something through the Commons, I don't see where she can go if she is going to stay so close, unless she gets this wonderful huge concession from Brussels. But because the defeat was so large, all the signs from the EU are that they don't even know what they could give her, which would get that over the line, so they don't want to make a big concession on that ground.
I think the other thing worth remembering is the scale of defeat has another effect, which is because she needs to get 116 more votes, it's very hard to see how you can get that from the Labour side without the active involvement of Jeremy Corbyn, or at least his kind of passive permission to people to go and do this. And so I think that is the problem. But, and this is the thing we all need to remember, is that, you know, at the moment, it looks like we're in kind of Brexit paralysis. It looks like that nothing can move any which way. But by the 29th of March and that evening, one of the three things that currently seem impossible needs to happen. You know, there either needs to be a deal, needs to get through the House of Commons, or you need the government to pursue no deal and not be brought down or stopped in some way by the House of Commons. Or thirdly, you need Article 50 to have been extended or revoked. I still think that the least unlikely option is a deal. That doesn't mean I'm saying it's like, but it's the least unlikely. And I think that the way that some people in government think that you get there is that as it becomes clearer that the House of Commons is finding ways to stop no deal, and those would include potentially just simply revoking Article 50, that you prune that Tory rebellion back, that some people feel that they've had their cathartic moment, they voted against it the first time, now they can say that they're voting for it very reluctantly the second time to try and save Brexit. And if you could prune that ERG rebellion back, then the number of Labour rebels you need becomes more manageable. And then I think you get into this game of, what can you do on customs? You know, you can do some stuff on workers' rights and environmental rights. And then what can you do on customs that allows Labour MPs to feel that they can claim a victory, but at the same time allows Liam Fox to say, well, my department isn't redundant, we can still do this and we can still do that. And so I think that is where things are. But I think the odd thing is lots of people thought that the vote on May's deal and a defeat for it would unblock things. Suddenly things would become obvious. But today things don't look very much more unblocked because nothing's really getting momentum. You know, today we had 78 Labour MPs come
71,
out.
71, I think.
Sorry, 71, apologies.
You did them a service.
Come out for a second referendum. Again, with Jeremy Corbyn still so far away from seeming to back that. But then 71 is not a number that is going to put huge pressure on him. So nothing seems to be gaining momentum. And so we are all left, you know, wondering what's going to happen next. But the point is, something does have to happen next.
Something has to change.
That's our conclusion.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Katie. And regular listeners of this podcast are doubtless enjoying our subscription offer that we have at the moment. And in fact, we've had a message from a nice man called Paul, who is worried about our potentially bankrupting offer. And he has decided not to go for it because he's worried about our financial sustainability. Now, hopefully the rest of you will have fewer scruples and will be very keen to subscribe to 12 issues of The Spectator for just £12 and get a free £20 John Lewis voucher. Don't think about the maths, just do it. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher. Thanks for listening.